You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. You can also find us online at www.cjsf.ca, or you can call us at 778-782-CJSF.
How do we become a sustainable world? As the stakes for our survival continues to rise, so does our global consciousness. We are in the midst of a great spiritual awakening and are laying the foundations for a happy, peaceful, just, and sustainable world. With clear vision, determination, and a positive attitude, we are making sustainability happen. The transformation is already underway. You are listening to Sustainable Futures.
Welcome to Sustainable Futures. Today we're speaking with Sean Buckley, the Natural Health Products Association.
Your audience really should be up in arms. They should download the bill. They should read it. They should, you know, go to any lawyer they know or legal aid or get somebody to explain what to say. Wait a second, what exactly does this mean, abolish the law of trespass? And we really need to be asking ourselves, should we be moving away from the rule of law?
I'm Ryan Fletcher, and you are listening to Sustainable Futures. On today's episode, we're going to continue our conversation with Sean Buckley on the topic of natural health products. Sean Buckley is both a lawyer and part of the Natural Health Products Association. We're talking about upcoming bills that are going to effectively limit the whole natural health product industry. And we're going to talk about some issues surrounding that. Most particularly in depth, we're going to talk about the idea of regulation in larger trends in society as a whole around regulating. And I think this is a very, very good interview. He was a wonderful person to have speak. Very intelligent, very wide, a very clear view of both the detail, small picture, and the big picture. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode of Sustainable Futures. So here we are with Sean Buckley.
Now, another thing that we want to raise awareness of is people assume that there's no risk to removing products from the market, which is actually quite curious. And, you know, I can cite you examples like, you know, Strauss Heart Drops or True Hope Empower Plus, where there's been some pretty compelling evidence that if you remove these products from the market, you would cause a lot of harm. And your listeners probably don't know, but you know, I work at the Natural Health Product Protection Association, but I'm also a lawyer and I work in a law office, and the majority of my practice is actually helping manufacturers and distributors of natural health products. And when I get a call from a manufacturer or distributor saying, Health Canada is telling me to recall a product and take it off the market, we actually have to do a balanced risk analysis. I mean, we're required at law. Health Canada just assumes that if you're not in compliance with the law, that your product's dangerous. And it can be something as small as a licensing violation. The manufacturer distributor actually has to worry about the Food and Drug Act and has to worry about the criminal code. So, for example, I can use the name Wild Vineyard as an example because they've said I can talk about them. Health Canada issued a public advisory, I think it was last year or the year before, saying, danger, danger, six of their products have arsenic. So they hire me and they say, listen, they're telling us to recall their products. So step one, and we do this in every case, is ascertain is there a risk. So we send the products to one of the only two labs in Canada that can actually tell us if the arsenic is organic or inorganic. Because even Health Canada will tell you organic arsenic is perfectly safe. Right. If the inorganic, very toxic. So the lab told us, actually, they couldn't detect any inorganic arsenic. It was all organic, And we would expect organic to be there because these products all had seaweed, and it's very common to find organic arsenic in seaweed.
Mm-hmm.
So we ascertained, okay, the products are safe. Next question is, well, okay, there isn't a real safety risk. Health Canada's wrong on the danger, but, you know, they're going to cause you a lot of grief, and they can potentially shut your business down if you don't comply. Should you comply? So I have to ask the next question. Are there people out there that actually rely on your product for serious health conditions, and are we in a situation where we can't transition them to competitor products? And I ask that question because under the criminal code, they can be criminally negligent, actually face life imprisonment if somebody dies, if they take a product off the market people rely on.
Who would be?
The manufacturer.
Ah, okay.
So yeah. Because we, for public policy reasons, we have said you cannot put a treatment out on the market that, and have people come to rely on the treatment and then withdraw it and watch them suffer. As a population, we don't want that to happen. So you actually have a legal obligation if you start offering treatments that are effective and people rely on them. If you withdraw the treatment and they suffer bodily harm, you can be charged with criminal negligence causing bodily harm. If they die, you could be charged with criminal negligence causing death. In the True Hope case, they were actually charged by Health Canada for selling E-Empower Plus without a drug identification number.
Mm-hmm.
After a three-week trial, the Provincial Court of Alberta said that if they had stopped selling, they would have caused criminal negligence causing death. The evidence was just so clear. If they had withdrawn that product from the market, there would have been deaths. And
mm-hmm.
we're talking expert evidence and the whole bit. The court made as a finding of fact that if they had withdrawn this single natural health product from the market, they would have caused deaths and would have been criminally negligent. What's interesting is the manufacturers out there, the natural health practitioners out there, the doctors out there, the nurses out there, all your healthcare practitioners, they're under an obligation if a regulatory body says, well, stop a treatment, take this drug off the market, or take this natural health product off the market. This isn't just a natural health product issue. They're all under an obligation to kind of do a risk analysis and figure out, well, what's the best, actually? What's the safest course of action? Maybe I should leave it on the market and try to mitigate any risk that may be there differently. But in the case of natural health products, we find Health Canada never does a risk analysis of the danger of removing these products from the market. And it's just curious. So we're in a situation where we have regulations that in theory are there for our safety, that are driving products off the market in the numbers of tens of thousands that people rely on for their health. I mean, we're not taking natural health products as a population because we want to spend money out of our own pocket for health issues
mm-hmm.
when we can go to the doctor and we don't have to pay at all. We're doing it because we're finding real relief, and in some cases, for very serious conditions. But we're pretending as a society that we can take over half of those products away. I think it's going to be closer to three quarters by the time we're done, and that there won't be a health consequence to that. And I just find it very curious that we're not raising that issue, that we're not having that debate. Wait a second, is there a health risk for us to remove products that people are using for health issues? And nobody in government is asking that question.
Yeah. Well, very fundamentally, it seems very strange just to think that a natural health product would be deemed something that's a risk, especially with all of these manufactured products that we have that are actually, if you look at it, it's kind of strange that, and it's the psychology behind it all, right?
Well, yeah, and you see, we're not saying that there isn't a risk, because there's a risk to everything. But what we're saying is, okay, if you're going to say natural health products carry a risk and then come out with regulations appropriate to manage that risk, well, first of all, identify what the risk is, because risk is, it's relative. So, for example, I mean, I remember listening to CBC a couple of years ago, and there was a doctor on there complaining that runners in Canada are dying every year from drinking too much bottled water, because they just have in their minds that, you know, they have to keep hydrated, and they drink too much when their bodies are under tremendous stress, and some die from drinking bottled water. This doctor was frustrated because he had searched the medical literature and couldn't find examples of runners dying from dehydration. I guess they just have to stop running. So statistically, as odd as it sounds, it's a fact that bottled water carries a higher risk than the entire natural health product industry. There's no question that peanut butter does, because Canadians die every year from eating peanut butter.
Huh.
And no Canadians ever died in Canadian history from taking a natural health product.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that there's not a risk that we should manage with appropriate regulations. But if we're going to have appropriate regulations, it does mean that we should identify, okay, is this a very low risk? What's it risky compared to, so that we don't over-regulate? Because, yes, it's starting to become into people's awareness that the chemical type of drug, so synthetic chemicals that have not been ingested by humans ever, and they're being introduced as drugs for health conditions, we know that that group of products carries a very high risk.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I've heard some risk analysis people say that it's in the top three leading causes of death in Canada is just adverse reactions to chemical drugs.
Yeah, you just got to think what's going on here, right? It's odd.
So, you know, if we want to then have a balanced risk approach, then really from a public policy perspective, we probably should be privileging natural health products and take into account if we take natural health products away from people and then we force them really to onto chemical pharmaceutical drugs, that itself carries risk, and we need to build that into our risk analysis when we're trying to arrive at regulations that actually will manage risk as effectively as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you see, we're not saying as an organization there shouldn't be regulations, but if safety is the issue, then we actually have to look at, is what we're doing now safe, and how should we best be approaching this to ensure that the safety of Canadians actually is being protected.
Mm-hmm.
And so we actually feel that what we're doing now is dangerous. It's funny, several years ago, I don't know if your listeners remember Bill C-420. That was a bill working its way through Parliament to amend the Food and Drug Act to try and prevent the crisis that we're currently having with natural health products being removed from the market. I was invited as an expert witness to testify in front of the Standing Committee of Health. And I asked the Standing Committee, and some people really got upset that I asked this question. If we come back here in 10 years, how many lives will the natural health products regulations have saved? Because, you know, we're being told they're for our safety. And the answer really has to be none. Because if we've gone now 142 years of Canadian history without a single death, why would we expect there to be a death in the next 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean there won't be, but, you know, really any statistician will say, well, the answer is zero.
Right.
Then I asked the next question. I said, well, if we come back here in 10 years and you guys allow the natural health product regulations to drive most of the products off of the market, how many lives will the natural health product regulations have cost? And nobody can answer that question, but that question really upsets a lot of people. You know, the idea that we might be regulating in a way that is not safe.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like there's a real push too to really, from what I read and in hear about, to really actively, you know, limit access to natural health products and really bring in the chemical products. And a couple of questions here. First of all, do you observe that, and why do you think that's happening?
So first of all, there's no question that we observe it. Like, we think in the next couple of years, actually, that the number of natural health products that are available to Canadians will be down to roughly 20,000 licensed products. People might think, wow, that's a lot of products. But we probably were as high as 80,000. And the types of products will change. So, for example, I've cited the Strauss Heart Drops. I've cited E-Empower Plus. Two examples of multi-ingredient products that were very innovative, proved to be very effective both, you know, in the marketplace as far as consumers finding relief, and also there have been some studies done on both of those products. Those types of products are the types of products that we're going to lose, and we will not have new ones coming onto the market. So one thing that consumers don't know is that the industry has basically stopped developing new products, and that is because there's an absolute conviction that you will not get new products approved.
Mm-hmm.
And when I spoke about these licensing numbers, 20,000 product license applications processed, and, you know, a little over 10,000 failures, Health Canada has focused on license applications which are mainly single ingredient license applications, and it's easier to get a license if your product has a single ingredient. And every time you add another ingredient, it just gets harder to get a license. So we actually think that the failure rate is going to be higher once the multi-ingredient products, more license applications for them are processed. But where I think we're going to end up is we're going to have a lot of single-ingredient products. We're going to have a lot of multivitamins. We will have multi-ingredient products with ingredients that Health Canada has deemed to be just ultra-safe, you know, like cayenne pepper or garlic or something. Basically, I think we're going to have like a list of monographs. And so if you add an ingredient that there's a monograph for, fine, you can have a multi-ingredient product. So it'll be a lot of repetition. So when I say mm-hmm. we're going to have 20,000 products, you know, you might have 200 or 300 or 400 ginseng products out there. Yeah. Different capsule weights, different manufacturers, powders, drinks. The shelves will look full when you walk into a health food store, but it will be a very different product mix than you had this year. We have a different product mix than we had last year. I mean, our pinnacle was roughly 2005, and we've been going downhill since. So in Canada, the industry will be a shadow of itself. We're in touch with, in fact, we formed a group, a legal scientific group, with both the United States and Europe to see what's going on there. And, I mean, Europe is an absolute train wreck as far as access to products and over-regulation. And the United States, which has this wonderful model of presuming them safe, has come up with new and creative ways to drive products off the market. Basically by, you know, the latest thing is requiring extremely strict good manufacturing processes, which most of the small and medium guys just simply cannot do. It'd be just too costly. It just seems across the board, not just in Canada, there seems to be a move to restrict our access to these types of products. It's all in the name of safety, except the government is not actually doing a balanced risk analysis. You wanted me to, you know, kind of address why I think this is happening.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that I can really answer that question, because we just then get into the realm of speculation. Like sometimes when the media asks me that, you know, they're wanting me to talk about pharmaceutical conspiracies and stuff like that. But I think it's dangerous just to speculate. I mean, I think it's safer to just say, well, if this is what's happening, we have this pattern where we see our access is being restricted. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sure, it's easier to solve a problem if you understand the cause. But I think we can solve the problem if Canadians just wake up and say, hey, we actually want to have access to these treatments. We want to be in a situation when we face a health crisis to have choices other than just going to the mainstream medical model. And I'm not here to in any way, you know, criticize the mainstream medical model. I'm just here to say we should have a choice. Because in some cases, I think most of us kind of access both. You know, for some things, we want to access the mainstream medical system, and for some, we want to access the natural health community. And we're going to be losing our ability to make an effective choice. And I think we also need to come up with a solution. And this is Sustainable Futures, and you guys kind of have a focus on solution.
Yeah.
There is an initiative out there which is now sponsored by several groups that have a concern in health freedom called the Charter of Health Freedom. And your listeners can access, there's a website, www.charterofhealthfreedom.com. And what the charter is it's just consumer and industry groups coming up with a solution. And what the charter does is basically it's a piece of legislation to require the government to adhere to the law. And when I say that, we've got on the ground these regulations basically strangling the industry and suffocating the industry. But the court system is just wonderful in making it clear that Canadians actually have tremendous health rights, that we have sovereignty over our own bodies, that if we have a health crisis and we need a treatment, whether it's a chemical drug, whether it's a natural health product, whether it's a medical device, that it doesn't matter if it's not in compliance with the law. If we need it for our health, courts say we should have access to it. Courts have interpreted Section 7 of our Charter, which is our right to life, liberty, and security of the person, quite broadly in protecting our right to make decisions fundamental to our being, such as health decisions, and how we will choose to treat ourselves and what we should have access to when we're sick. And so we've got all these wonderful court decisions from the Supreme Court of Canada down, and yet the government of Canada doesn't honor that in how they regulate the medical system.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Charter basically takes the rights that the courts say that we have, sets them out and says, here are the rights Canadians have, and then charges the government to honor those rights and creates a health freedom ombudsman to kind of watch as a watchdog and make sure that the rights that we have are protected. And it also moves natural health products. It gets rid of this presumption of danger.
Yeah.
So it actually gives the government more powers to take natural health products off the market if there is danger, you know, in that very seldom case where there be legitimate danger. But for those that don't present a risk, you can't over-regulate them off the market. Because I think it's important, you know, consumers have been very good at being reactive, but at the same time, we have to come up with a positive solution that can actually solve the problem.
Yeah.
And I can say we're quite excited about it. Other groups are quite excited about it. It seems like a wonderful initiative, and would invite your listeners to visit that website and check it out, because we need the group sponsoring it. We're shooting for 3 million signatures on a petition to get the government to adopt it as law.
Mm-hmm.
And you can download the petition off the site, charterofhealthfreedom.com or .org, doesn't matter.
They both go there, right?
They both go there, yeah. But I think the official site is charterofhealthfreedom.org.
Okay. So there's been some pretty well-circulated bills going out in recent years. I was wondering if you might be able to talk about a few of these different bills that have been coming through. For example, Bill C-51. What was that one about?
There were two bills that came out in the last parliament.
Mm-hmm.
There was Bill C-51 and Bill C-52.
Yeah.
And they were both introduced on the same day, and they were both very similar. So Bill C-51 was an act to amend the Food and Drug Act, and it made a whole bunch of various amendments. But where it really got people upset were in the enforcement powers. So it basically rewrote the law on search and seizure and destroying property. And this Bill C-52, which was the Consumer Protection Act, the enforcement provisions were basically word for word the same as Bill C-51. Now, why I bring up that these two bills were tied together is because the government now has reintroduced what was Bill C-52, you know, to try and get it passed, except it's now called Bill C-2.
C-2? Yeah.
Bill C-2. And so your listeners need to be aware that Bill C-2, billed as the Consumer Protection Act, is currently working its way through Parliament. Now, Bill C-2 does some really interesting things. So, for example, it's very broad in scope. It covers every consumer product. So it covers every business, every home, every manufacturer, every distributor that deals with consumer products or has consumer products. Bill C-2 abolishes the law of trespass. And some people would go, well, you know, that doesn't sound that concerning, because we actually don't think about our rights being taken away in Canada. We just take them for granted. It doesn't dawn on us that the government may ever try to remove some of our fundamental freedoms.
Mm-hmm.
And because it never dawns on us, we actually don't even think about what they mean. But the law of trespass basically means that nobody, whether they're just a private citizen or whether they're the state in the form of a police officer, can enter onto our property without our invitation, and they have to leave if we ask them to leave. And that's such a fundamental right that, let's say you trespass on my property and I sue you for trespass, I don't even have to prove I was damaged, which is really the only civil tort that you don't have to prove damage. But our court system so protects our right to privacy on our own private property that it just presumes we're damaged. And also you can get charged criminally with trespass before Bill C-6.
Mm-hmm.
So now Bill C-6 allows Health Canada inspectors to enter onto any private property, whether it be business or whether it be residential. They can't enter your house. I'll get to that in a second. And you can't tell them to leave, and there's no legal recourse. So just so you have your perspective, because this is going to set a precedent then for other agencies. You could be sitting down having dinner and have a police officer now or Health Canada inspector peering through your dining room window while he or she's standing in your flower garden, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
I mean, I think now when you have a barbecue in the summer, you need to have a couple of extra beers in your freezer or your cooler, you know, in case the police are in your backyard, so that at least they can have a cold brew. You know, we think, just wait a second, we don't want that. I don't want the police being able to stand outside my window and watch me while I eat or whatever else I do. This law of trespass is actually very valuable, and we have to ask ourselves the question, are we in such danger from consumer products that we need to allow the police onto private property without honoring the rule of trespass? Our current law is that people like Health Canada and inspectors can go into business premises during business hours and check things out and make sure that they're safe.
Right.
If they want to go in after hours or if they want to go onto, you know, residential property, they need a warrant.
Right, right.
And that's been working for us. So first question is, do we need to move away from that? Now, I told you that they need a search warrant to get into our homes, and some people will read Bill C-2 and go, oh, well, at least my home is still protected. I can't be sitting there having a bubble bath and have the police barge into my bathroom without a search warrant. Bill C-2 actually takes away very fundamental protection there. Like right now, if Health Canada or the RCMP or the Vancouver Police Department, basically every federal inspection agency, all use the same search warrant provisions, those found in the criminal code. To get a search warrant to go into your private home, or your business for that matter, basically the police have to show that there's a substantial likelihood that they're going to find evidence of a crime.
Right.
And that's actually, it balances our interests, because as a society, as a people, we have an interest in having privacy in our own homes. Like, really, we would find it devastating to have a police officer come in to our bathroom while we're having a bubble bath. We don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we have an interest in making sure that the police can solve crimes, because that actually protects us. So we have this balance. We will allow the state to get access into our homes if there's a substantial likelihood they're going to find evidence of a crime. But Bill C-6 allows a justice to issue a warrant if they're likely to find something covered by the Act. Well, the Act covers every consumer product. So you tell me what house
so they can find
doesn't
everything.
Have a consumer product in it.
Right, right.
And again, it raises the question, are we in such danger from consumer products that we need to move away from our current search warrant provisions, which by all accounts seem to be working wonderfully and doing that balance that we want done, where our privacy is protected, but the state's legitimate interest in solving crime is also protected? We have this balance. Do we need to move away from that balance? Bill C-2 gets worse. It moves us away from the rule of law. Now, let me explain what the rule of law is, because, you know, we hear terms like that, but what does it mean?
Right, yeah.
You are listening to Sustainable Futures. This is an interview with Sean Buckley of the Natural Health Products Association.
Basically, if you can imagine, you know, on one side you have the state, and on the other side you have the citizens. The rule of law is where you have the court between the two. And so if the state wants to imprison you or the state wants to seize your property, they have to go through the courts.
Right, right.
I mean, back in medieval time, you know, if you said something to tick off the king would just send the soldiers and drag you off into the dungeon.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if the king wanted your daughter or wanted your property, the soldiers would just come and grab it and take it. You know, after a while, people kind of thought, you know, we don't like this. Mm-hmm. And revolutions were fought, and we got to the place where if the king or the state wants to imprison us, they have to go through the court. If they want to seize our property, they have to go through the court. It has to be managed by the court. So now, before Bill C-2, if the state wants to seize our property, the court will allow the state if there's legitimate state interests and there's laws allowing it. So let's say you owe, you know, a big income tax bill and they've gotten a judgment against you, they can get the court permission to seize your property to satisfy the judgment. Or if there's evidence of crime, they can do that. Under the Hazardous Products Act, if there's danger, they can do that. But it's all managed by the court. And the courts also require, once the state seizes something, to immediately report it to the court. And the court has to give the state permission to hold your property. The court will only give the state permission to hold your property for a limited amount of time before it has to be given back, unless things are started, like court proceedings, you know, whether they be criminal or civil.
Right.
And that's the rule of law. Under Bill C-2, Health Canada inspectors can seize property, and there's no limits on the property. It can be bank accounts, it can be buildings, real estate, it can be just your stock. There's no limits. They do not have to apply for a warrant. They do not have to report the seizure to a court ever. They can hold it. There's indeterminate periods of time. In many cases, they can destroy the property. A new one is so here they can seize your property without court permission. They can hang on to it for as long as they want, really, and they can charge you for the storage to add insult to injury. So it's a complete move away from the rule of law. Even if we were in a situation where we were finding consumer products to be so dangerous, we'd still have to ask the question, are we in such danger that we want to move ourselves away from the rule of law? Because people who actually think about our rights go, wait a second, actually, the real danger is allowing any scenario where the state can start seizing property and start destroying property without court supervision.
Yeah.
Because then you move away from the rule of law and you're in a police state situation, except that police states actually usually have laws and go through the courts. They're just not independent courts. Let's just even go further with Bill C-2. Under Bill C-2, there are criminal offenses with multi-million-dollar fines where they can just absolutely destroy, you know, medium and small businesses for noncompliance with this new act. But there's also administrative penalties. And the administrative penalties actually are really small. I mean, I think the highest fine is $2,500. I could be wrong on that figure, but it's low. And some people might go, oh, good. This law creates administrative penalties, so, you know, maybe Health Canada would charge me administratively and I'm not facing multi-million-dollar fines. Well, the administrative penalties actually are quite problematic from a rights and freedoms perspective. If you're charged criminally, you're presumed innocent, and you get to go to court. And the court decides whether you're innocent beyond a reasonable doubt.
Mm-hmm.
If they charge you administratively, you're presumed guilty. Okay? You're not presumed innocent, you're presumed guilty. You don't get a court hearing. You can apply to the minister for the minister to reconsider whether you're guilty, but this is all done on paper. You don't get a hearing. It's not beyond a reasonable doubt. It's balance of probabilities, which is a much lower standard.
Mm-hmm.
Usually in regulatory offenses or administrative offenses, your two big defenses are honest but mistaken belief and due diligence. So honest but mistaken belief is you honestly believed in the state of affairs that actually was wrong. So let's say we are distributing a consumer product. We sent it to the lab. The lab sent us lab reports back saying it's perfectly safe and we sell it, but the lab screwed up.
Right.
If we're charged criminally, we have the defense of honest but mistaken belief. Like, we honestly believe this was okay, and we're not punished criminally. It doesn't solve us from being sued civilly for any harm that was caused, but we're not criminally responsible. That defense is taken away for administrative offenses, as is the due diligence. So you're doing everything that a competent and responsible person would be doing in your situation. That's a defense, and that's taken away. But here's the icing on the cake on these administrative offenses. And a question for your audience. So the minister who has seized your property finds you guilty of an administrative offense, guess who gets to keep your property? The minister. So the very guy who determines whether or not you're guilty or innocent for an administrative offense, C-6 allows them to choose to keep your property if you're found guilty of an administrative offense, mm-hmm. You know, property that they've seized.
So you could have someone that just wants the property and they could just go after it that way?
That's the problem. That's why we can't allow that type of conflict of interest.
Yeah.
You know, also, the problem is the police and Health Canada and inspectors are just people. And I don't want to knock the police and I don't want to knock Health Canada and inspectors, because most of them are honest, trying to do their job as diligently as they can. But in every group of people, there's that odd bad apple that can let emotion or anger or other things get in there. And that's why we try to protect against conflicts of interest and protect and ensure that we have procedural fairness. So Bill C-6 does not really affect natural health products. There's still a danger there, which I can explain to natural health products. But your audience really should be up in arms. They should download the bill. They should read it. They should, you know, go to any lawyer they know or legal aid or get somebody to explain. Well, just say, wait a second, what exactly does this mean, abolish the law of trespass? And we really need to be asking ourselves, should we be moving away from the rule of law? Because as I say, you know, people that study rights and, you know, make a point of trying to protect our rights tell us that actually moving away from the rule of law is one of the most dangerous things we can possibly do as a society. I don't think that we're suffering from consumer product risk to the point that we need to sacrifice fundamental rights and freedoms. Mm-hmm. And it's curious. One thing that I've realized is, because as a Canadian, I've always just taken my rights for granted. I haven't really paid attention to what Parliament was doing, because it never occurred to me that any government would actually try to take away our fundamental rights. And now I realize we've moved into a new era where we can no longer take our rights for granted. And so, you know, we've watched under the Bush administration in the United States where they've just sacrificed tremendous rights and freedoms in the name of safety. And it's happening here also.
Same thing, yeah.
And it's just very interesting. We're living in a different world than we lived in even 5 years ago.
Yeah. That's it. I mean, everyone wants to be safe, right? Everyone wants to feel secure. So it's a good card to hold if you want to make changes that might not be popular.
Well, really, it's the main thing. And your audience should listen to this very carefully. Whenever the government... at any time, any government, go back in history, the rationale always, the explanation always for taking your rights and freedoms away is safety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is why there's famous quotes, I don't know if it was Jefferson or Benjamin Franklin, that quote that goes something like, you know, those that will sacrifice their freedom for safety will have neither. It's so very... very true. Like, great thinkers have made it clear that you cannot sacrifice freedom in the name of safety, because you're not going to be safe, and then you're not going to be free. And freedom is something to be cherished, but it is taken away in the name of safety.
Yeah.
And it's whittled away. Like, it's just surprising, you know. When I was younger, the number of things that I could do without the state punishing me was a lot lower. And it just seems every time we turn around, there's fewer things that we can do for safety. And it always sounds like a good idea, but it adds up. You know, I go to Hawaii every year, and I can ride motorcycles there without helmets. Now, every insurance company will say that's a stupid thing to do. I mean, you get in an accident, you want to be wearing a helmet. And I don't disagree with that. I mean, I ride in Canada, and I wear a helmet. But it's just interesting that the state will actually punish me if I don't wear a helmet here in Canada, as opposed to just charging me more insurance or allowing me to take the risk. Like, so as an adult, I don't have the option, the freedom to choose to undergo risky behavior. I have to wear a seatbelt. Again, it's a great idea. But if I don't, I'll get punished. And it just keeps adding up. And everyone is a brilliant idea. It's all great, and we all consent to it, but we fail to realize that at some point we will be in a situation where we're no longer even thinking about being responsible for ourselves and thinking about, you know, whether or not actually giving up all this freedom is a good idea or not.
Played a game in my younger life, a lot like Twister, but with a knife. Threw the point into the ground to bend my brother's body round. No one bled, and if they did, they didn't cry. Don't recall a watchful eye. I think we led safer lives when we played around with knives. I left the house for hours on end, home to eat then back again. Raced around the monkey trails with my back step brakes that never failed. I rode through the woods alone, out of sight and far from home. I think I got the richer life on my rusted no-speed bike. When patience broke, I was pulled to my room. I took it on the ass with the same wooden spoon that beat the cookie dough. No kid ever disappeared, and if they did, we'd never hear the sordid details of their death. Never landed on my doorstep. I was taught to be polite, how to eat and sit upright, but I was left alone to fight. Figure out if that felt right. I think we got the safer lives when we played around with knives. I think we led the safer lives when we played around with knives.
But we've completely strayed off of our natural health product topic.
We sure have. Yeah, I noticed that. But yeah, this is all very important things, and I mean, it's all connected too. So,
well, it is, because actually the overregulation of natural health products is just part of a wider trend.
Yeah.
So as I say, with this Consumer Safety Act, this Bill C-2, it's, you know, going to impose dramatic new obligations on small business, and it's in every area. And while we're on this Bill C-2, for those small business owners, Bill C-2 is now going to impose new sets of red tape by Health Canada on everyone involved in selling or distributing or fixing that consumer products. So, you know, now simple things like you have to keep records of who you get your products from and, you know, where you sold them and for how long. Well, can you imagine a dollar store?
Mm.
They're going to have phone books of paperwork every month, all in the name of consumer safety. And it all sounds good, but it's just the regulatory burden a lot of businesses already have tremendous problems with.
I mean, that's got to be a turnoff in itself, just all of the paperwork that gets invited with all of these regulations.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is at least in the case of Bill C-6, is, I mean, it will be imposing paperwork across the board, because nobody disagrees with, you know, if you're dealing with products that are inherently dangerous, fine, let's have a paper trail. And it's not that there isn't already a paper trail. Another interesting thing that business owners should be aware of is it pierces the corporate veil. And what I mean by that is usually people will incorporate into companies to avoid personal liability. So let's say I'm selling motorcycles or dirt bikes or ATVs, which are very, people get injured on these things.
Right.
I will be a company. And, you know, so my letterhead, it'll be, you know, Outdoor Motorsports LTD or Incorporated. I'm actually required to put that on there so that people at large, the public, know they're dealing with a company and know that if they get injured, they're going to be suing a company. They're not going to be suing me, the owner or shareholder or director. And we have that because otherwise a lot of people just won't be in businesses. I won't sell motorcycles if I'm worried that, you know, some guy going up a steep hill they shouldn't have been going up and they roll and they break their back, that I'm losing my house and my kids are out on the street. Bill C-6 pierces that veil, not for civil liability, but it says that directors and officers and people involved in any decision can actually be liable in addition to the corporation. And this is consumer products across the board. So, you know, that dollar store owner sells something that happened to be dangerous. Well, it's not just the company that is now liable. It's people in the company. And the curious thing is usually you have to be charged. Like there's some acts where the corporate veil is pierced. Usually it happens in environmental legislation. So, for instance, in BC, if I've got it right, our environmental legislation allows directors and officers and managers to be charged also alongside the company. And we actually just decided as a community that's what we wanted to make sure that this is adhered to. But what's interesting in Bill C-6 is you can be a director or officer. The company can get charged. You're not charged. And if the company's convicted, the court can impose penalties on you. And you never had the chance to defend yourself. That's an unusual move.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think actually the boards of trade and business owners really need to be paying attention to this bill. And the funny thing about it is we actually have pretty good consumer protection legislation in Canada already. When it was Bill C-52 in the last parliament, now it's Bill C-2, first thing I asked myself when I heard about the bill is, do you mean like in 2008, we don't have consumer protection legislation in Canada? Like, that just struck me as odd.
Yeah.
Because we seem to have a law for everything. And, well, when I looked into it, we have the Hazardous Products Act. That's what this new Consumer Protection Act is going to replace, is the Hazardous Products Act. It's a wonderful piece of legislation. I mean, if they have any evidence of harm, the minister can actually make an order. But the difference is that order has to be tabled in Parliament, reviewed by Parliament, and there are mechanisms, a review board with court powers that's independent. You know, so if the government got it wrong, you've got a recourse. It had the rule of law, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
So we actually have great legislation now. Doesn't mean that, you know, it can't be improved or made better, but we certainly don't need to move away from law of trespass and search without warrants and seizure without court supervision and destruction of a property without court supervision. It's quite fantastic. And we actually just think it's part of a wider international move.
So I guess it's important for people to realize that there are existing laws that are actually protecting the consumer.
Under a criminal code, if you're selling a product that's dangerous and you cause harm or death, you can be charged with criminal negligence. And somebody dies, it's life imprisonment. That's the minimum punishment.
Arguably, it's not even about that then. It's about the extra bit about the between the old act and the new one. What I'm getting here is that you're saying that the difference is that it's taken away this rule of law barrier.
That's the big difference. And then imposing red tape and obligations on every consumer business, even low-risk ones.
Yeah.
See, under existing law, they really only worry about, and they only have jurisdiction where there's substantial harm.
Mm-hmm.
And we could then now switch into constitutional law, because there's a very strong argument that the federal government does not have jurisdiction to pass this Consumer Products Act. And let me explain how that works. Under our BNA Act, so our Constitution of 1867, which sets out, okay, here are the powers the provinces have, here are the powers the federal government has. The provinces have jurisdiction over property and civil rights, which are the things we own and, you know, our commerce, stuff like that. The federal government doesn't. And in fact, it might surprise people, the federal government doesn't have jurisdiction over health. But if you think about it, it's the provinces that run the hospitals. It's the provinces that decide who can be doctors, who can be nurses, who can be naturopathic doctors. The provinces have jurisdiction over health, which is why the federal government just uses money as a stick. So the federal government says to the provinces, well, you adhere to, you know, our guidelines, or we won't give you transfer payments. So the Consumer Protection Act is actually a criminal law, just like our Food and Drug Act. It's a criminal law because they don't have jurisdiction over health. They don't have jurisdiction over property and civil rights. The trick is, to say that something's criminal because it's harmful, there has to be a certain level of harm. And one of my favorite cases is a 1949 Supreme Court of Canada decision, which lawyers call the Dairy Reference case. And after World War II, to protect us, the federal government made margarine illegal. And this was a criminal law act. And it goes all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada, and the federal government saying, no, we need to make margarine illegal because it just has such a high risk. And the Supreme Court of Canada said, well, you know, you can make a case that margarine is risky, but it's not a real high risk. Remember, I said risk is all relative, right?
Yeah. Is this opposed to butter or just...
like, yeah, as a, yeah. Well, really, I mean, the act was basically the dairy guys didn't want to compete with margarine, right? That's what it was all about. So the Supreme Court of Canada said, okay, there's a risk to margarine, but it's not a high enough risk to be criminal. For you federal government to step in provincial areas using your criminal law power saying there's harm, there has to be substantial harm. This came up recently. It was might be now, 5 years ago, I think December of 2004 is when we had the marijuana reference cases come out by the Supreme Court of Canada, Regina versus Kane and Regina versus Malmo Levine. They were arguing the Supreme Court of Canada that simple possession of marijuana should not be criminal. You know, leave trafficking alone and all of that, but simple possession shouldn't be criminal. And the Supreme Court of Canada, in deciding that it should be criminal, went back to this harm principle and talked about, yeah, to be criminal, you have to be over a harm threshold. And they found, because of, you know, youth and buying into the gateway argument, that it was just over that threshold of harm where the federal government could criminalize it. So I'm just bringing the court cases up to illustrate the principle that if you're going to say something is criminal and encroach upon federal jurisdiction, there has to be a certain level of harm. Under our current law, the Federal Hazardous Products Act, it has to be quite harmful before the federal government can step in. But under the Consumer Protection Act, this Bill C-6, it's any harm. Well, what's that? You could make an argument that it's quite a credible argument that this act actually is not constitutional. And I'm not sure why the separatists in Quebec and people in Alberta that are quite concerned about provincial jurisdiction have not raised the alarm.
Because, I mean, there's an element of harm in anything. There's always an element of risk in anything that you do, right?
No, well, that's it. And so, like I say, the listeners should be very aware whenever they hear that the government needs to do something for our safety is first ask, well, okay, you're telling me there's a risk, but a risk compared to what?
Right, yeah.
And then also ask the question, and what's the risk of your proposed government action then?
Words of advice from Sean Buckley of the Natural Health Products Association. I hope you're enjoying this interview as much as I did doing it and then listening back to it again now. This one really opened my eyes on legal matters, and for a long time I've personally felt that law should be taught in school, maybe from grade 5 onward, and as well as politics. And I think listening to this man speak gives you a good idea of why that might be a good idea. So I also hope you're enjoying this interview because there's still more to come. We're going to just have the final 20 or 30 minutes of the interview on the next episode of Sustainable Futures. This has been episode 30. If you'd like to get a copy of the audio from this episode, visit www.radioforall.net. That's radio4all.net. And put Sustainable Futures in the search engine. All of the episodes of Sustainable Futures are on there or about to be on there. I update that website fairly frequently with all episodes. The song in the introduction is Like a Mountain by Moira, and the song played towards the end of the interview was When We Played Around with Knives by John Mann. John Mann is the lead singer of Spirit of the West, an actor, as well as a great singer-songwriter. So thank you for listening, and till we meet again, I am wishing you a sustainable future.